Chapter 8. And finally. Things are, for the next little while, mostly just pleasant and normal. Capable and Nux find time to sit and talk quietly, endlessly. Toast continues her education in political science while working her two jobs. Cheeto's film wraps up, leaving her at odds for a couple of weeks. Dag and Ms. Brown are busy for hours a day in the garden. Furiosa and Max steal time wherever they can. The coffee shop, as quiet as it used to be in the pre-dawn hours, is now a bustling hub. Furiosa thinks longingly, often, of the days when it was just them in the dead silence together. In front of the other locals, they're glassy-eyed with one another, operating with only the barest apparent flickers of recognition, though Furiosa knows the news is out there, if only thanks to the racket she makes on her bike. After his work, Max comes to see her in the garage, to do a little work on his car, or else to get her help with it. He's the solitary type when it comes to mechanics, doesn't normally ask for directions from anyone, but tolerates it from her. It works because Furiosa never goes beyond the problem he offers her or instructs him on the next step. He prefers to figure that part out on his own, and just because she can see 5 moves down the line doesn't mean he wants a lecture on it, or the adventure of finding his own way there spoiled. Once, she leans in over his shoulder, rests a hand on the nape of his neck, and points out, "Fire hazard." Enough to make him pause and reevaluate where he's putting that particular wire, but that's the total extent of her interventionalism. They didn't fuck out on the motorcycle. More specifically, Max's pants stayed all the way on, erection ignored. She hadn't specifically intended it in advance, but she doesn't regret it, and she can tell that he doesn't either. She likes that she has this window now, where he watches her so hungrily, where he casually, eagerly continues to put himself into her hands. Max doesn't do the touch thing so much, she's come to realize. She has the girls, with their easy hugs and expressive movements, and Ms. Brown, who likes to rest a hand between Furiosa's shoulders when she's telling her something she wants to stick. Max has Nux, who's too intimidated by him to step too close, and a tendency to recoil when strangers make the mistake of stepping close, who looks ready to flip the town's little old priest into the flower bushes out of surprise when the man suddenly emerges into his field of vision, taking his hands to grip, to shake. The priest gives him earnest exultations about how nice it is to have more young men joining their community, while Max nods, twitchily, and waits until it's polite to extricate himself from the situation. Later, lounging in the coffee shop, 3/4 of the way through the newspaper, Furiosa thinks of that moment and glances up. Max is on a chair, with a cleaning cloth, getting the dust off the tops of the blades of the ceiling fan, and for a rare, brief window, the place is theirs alone. She slips out of her chair, waits until she knows he sees her, then slips in close to his side, hooking 2 fingers into one of his belt loops. Max snorts and gives the fan a spin, reaching for the next blade. And Furiosa takes advantage of the open stretch of his side, the top pole of cotton over his skin, to lean in and give that very vulnerable spot just below the ribcage a short, quick bite. He groans, honest to goodness, and reaches down to put a hand against the back of her head, steadying himself suddenly against the ceiling fan. And she waits until she's sure he's got his balance, before sliding out and away from him, folding the newspaper back up, setting it on the counter, and sauntering her way out the door. Capable's first night in her piano bar turns into enough of an affair that they need to take 2 cars. Ms. Brown drives the Mazda with Capable and Nux, and Furiosa piles Toast, Dag, and Cheeto in with her, then swings by to pick up Max. They pull up at his house, and Cheeto, who had been in the front, slips out without needing to be asked and climbs into the back. Max takes her place passenger side and buckles himself in as Furiosa pulls them out and takes them out towards the highway. The girls are expectantly silent for a moment, adjusting to their quiet. The only real greeting Max and Furiosa make, after all, is as she catches his eyes while facing him, making a right-hand turn onto the next road. Toast caves. Babbles. "You've got all of us because Ms. Brown is giving Nux some kind of shovel talk."
"Shovel talk?"
prompts Max, with perfect surprise. The Furiosa can tell he knew perfectly well what toast means, but that she wants to be asked. You know, you heard our capable and we'll bury you in the backyard with a shovel for the mole crickets to eat. Stop talking about that, says Cheeto, who wasn't even there, but heard the whole story and has a tender sort of heart and apparently a rather weak stomach. Well, Max says at length, be good for him. He's going to get it more than once. And he might as well get the rough one out of the way first. Furiosa agrees with what he's left unsaid, to the agreement from the back. Ms. Brown is a sweet, kindly smiling woman, and Furiosa is absolutely convinced that she has a body or two buried at least somewhere on her property. Poor Nux, says Cheeto, reaching up and touching her fingertips to the glass pane, watching the sunset go by outside. Poor Capable, corrects Stag, because that's got to be worse, in her opinion, simultaneously nerve-wracking and mortifying. Toast just grins and leans forward in her chair. She has the middle seat, so this puts her squarely between the two of them. Furiosa is interested to see that Toast's presence doesn't set off Max's startle reflex the same way the priest did, but he does seem very alert to have her so nearby. You know, you're in for it next, Max. Only they won't send Ms. Brown for you. From the back, Cheeto actually crows as she decides she agrees, and Furiosa feels her eyebrows arch. Toast continues. You know her, so probably you're going to get a visit from one of the other sisters. Max thinks she's kidding. Honestly, Toast probably halfway thinks she's kidding. Furiosa looks over at them and watches that look melt off Max's face as he sees her and sees that, yes, this is an awkwardness that might actually happen to him. You'll do fine, Furiosa decides. Now Dag and Cheeto are both grinning as well, as Max sits back in his seat, looking at the road ahead. We'll protect you, Dag promises loyally. Furiosa's biker family won't turn you to dog meat on our watch. Furiosa takes a curve, thinking privately that if the Vavolini wanted something, there was no way in hell these kids would get in their way. But she's kind enough not to say it. For their sakes, not for Max, who reads it clearly in her face. His intentions are honorable, Cheeto decides, settling back in her chair, like that settles it, it'll be fine. Not that honorable, Dag contradicts with one of her crowing laughs. That's enough, Furiosa decides, and not just because they're coming up on the parking lot and Ms. Brown, who, if she joins in on this drift, will make everything infinitely worse. We're here. Gear yourselves up to go back to torturing Capable. An obedient, if still mirthful, silence falls in the back, until they're in, parked, and the girls can pour out. Max looks like he's on the verge of asking if he's really going to end up toe-to-toe with a lesbian biker, but seems to decide her answer won't help. Instead, he crosses to the back of the car, where he waits for her to catch up, and then tentatively puts one of his arms around her waist.
This all right?
He checks, even as his arm tightens just a touch, and she feels herself smiling. It marks them as a them, in public, in front of everyone, and he has a way of asking for permission when others might not think that it mattered.
Sure.
Shifting closer so they can walk in together like that.
It's a good idea.
It'll make it harder for our lesbian snipers to get you with a clean hit. He murmurs one of his wordless agreements and walks her into the bar. The show isn't much of a show. People murmur through it. It isn't really billed as an event, more of a way to pass a Tuesday. So a few of the regulars talk loudly. But Capable is lovely and they're all proud of her, especially Nux. Nux thinks she's the one who hung the moon in the sky on a normal day. So seeing her play the piano, the kid is beyond smitten. It's a good night. They get nachos to share, the girls get beer, Ms. Brown gets whiskey, and Max and Furiosa drink water. Greenham Commons, Ms. Brown is telling the girls, was a military base in the UK where somebody decided it'd be a fine idea to store US bombs, nuclear weaponry, back in the 70s. So the CND decided to stage a march. None of these pitiful one-day affairs. This lasted 3 days, four. a pilgrimage down to the base. When we got there, we set up camp in a circle round the fence, which was several miles long. Everyone held up mirrors to reflect the base back in on itself and to surround it with positive female energy.
Female?
Dag clarifies, a little more consistently unused to this kind of language than the others by now.
Sure.
The camp, we stayed there for years, you know, was all women. The base was this big circle and had a number of gates that we named. Green Gate, Blue Gate. Some of the gates men were allowed to visit in the daytime to see their wives and girlfriends, but others were women only, all the time. Overnight, no men were allowed.
Dag shoots an uncertain glance at Max, who seems, as always, unfazed and unperturbed by this particular brand of feminism. His non-reaction goes a long way with Ms. Brown, Furiosa expects.
Back then, you see, the world was a different place. You all are too young to remember it, and Max and Furiosa would have just been little kids. But there was a feeling, a real feeling, that the world could end at any minute, that a nuclear holocaust was an inevitability if good people didn't get up and take a stand. It led to actions like you wouldn't believe, actions like I haven't seen the like of since. There were hundreds of us, and many camped at the Commons for years. There were women who stayed so long babies were born there, delivered under the shelter of tarps into the arms of midwives. That's how entrenched we were.
What did you camp in? Toast wants to know. Tents?
Nah. The base, it paid people to come out and trash anything they could get their hands on. We had tarps, and we'd string them up to the sides of trees and make lean-tos. We had campfires. We sometimes had a pot, though a lot of those got stolen. You'd keep a cup and a spoon on you, and wash them whenever you were done in the nearby ponds. Bathed in those too, though that was a hell of its own. The soldiers would come out and yell things I'd never heard the like of, would try to take pictures.
Cheeto frowns in concern, and Furiosa leans back. This is lore she's grown up on, so she listens with only one ear, watching the rest of the bar go by. The girls are getting a few looks, of course. They're young and pretty, but no one looks like they're anywhere near doing anything serious about it. Furiosa gives one guy a quick, piercing look when he makes eye contact, a subtle back the hell off that he takes with good grace, turning back to his drink.
So that night, we broke into the compound and stole a jeep,
Ms. Brown is saying, and the laughter draws her back to the table. Even Max is chuckling now, surprised into engaging by the lively, wily story.
This militant woman, a little more hardcore than the rest of us, Leslie, love of my life Leslie was, she knew how to hotwire a car. We used wire cutters to get through the fence, boosted the thing, then didn't know what to do with it. We just started blaring the horn and screaming around in circles until we were surrounded in a circle of floodlights and gun barrels.
Oh my God, says Toast. I can't believe nuclear security was that bad.
Well, that was the point, love. If we could get in there with little to no training, all except Leslie, of course, then how safe was it to have the bloody things to begin with?
So what happened? Dag pushes, wanting the resolution to the story. Furiosa knows that the answer to that was complicated, that momentum had died down over the years, but eventually the base had dearmed, and that the action had been part of a crush that had put real pressure on governments to seriously consider global responsibility and the insanity of the Cold War.
World hasn't ended yet, Ms. Brown explains, much more succinctly than Furiosa could have. So I'm guessing we did something right, didn't we?
Max goes to get another round of beer later. Ms. Brown is explaining the mists of Avalon to her curious circle of onlookers. Even Nux has snapped back into the conversation for this. But Furiosa has read it, so she watches Max instead. He negotiates his careful way to the end of the bar that's least crowded, and talks to the barkeep with his fingers, holding up four, holding up two as he places their order. The bartender asks him something and he nods. The man starts filling a pitcher. She approves of the cautious way Max waits, one arm on the wood, of the way he watches the barkeeper's hands even as he digs into his back pocket for his wallet. The barkeeper says something else to him as he sets the pitcher down on the bar top, and Max frowns and doesn't answer. The man is pouring water now, oblivious to the growing look of irritation on Max's face. Furiosa can't read what they're talking about, but does get to see the moment where the guy looks up and sees that whatever he's saying isn't gaining traction. He looks awfully glad for the big wooden bar between them right about now. From the guilty glance the man directs at their table, she can make a pretty educated guess at who he was talking about. She turns back to the table and only looks at Max when he sinks back down next to her, putting the beer in the center of the table, putting her water glass in front of her. "I'm paying you back for that," she informs him, knee brushing his under the table. "I'd let you," Max answers with his usual equanimity as he puts an arm around the back of her chair just for a moment. "But it turned out to be on the house." Ms. Brown murmurs approvingly into her whiskey as Capable finishes up the set. Without a word on the subject, they drop the girls off first on the way back, pulling up out front so they can pile out of the car and into the house. "I can drive you home," Furiosa offers. "Or we can pull up the lane and park behind my place." Max seems to consider it, and she gives him time to. In the silence of the car, her breathing is deep and steady, and she finds it's in time with his. "Please," he says, and nods up at her house. She smiles and makes the turn into the drive. It can't quite be said that they spend the first hour talking, because they're still so quiet around one another, even like this. Especially, maybe, now that they've spent the evening surrounded by the crushing sound in the bar. Furiosa pours them both a bit of her bourbon, and they go up to her bedroom, leave their boots strewn on the floor. Max lies on his back, with the glass balanced on his solar plexus, one hand near it, the other splayed on the bed next to her. Furiosa lies beside him, on her side, further down the bed, so that her forehead is near his fingertips, so that when the mood takes him he can reach out and brush his fingers across her skin. He does it now, thumb stroking the furrow between her brows. She sighs and relaxes her expression, giving up turning the day's worries over and over in her mind. "Is it splendid?" Him knowing the name doesn't startle her, though hearing it now sort of does. She looks up at him and wonders which of the other girls told him, and how much. Instead of asking, she nods. He looks back up at the ceiling. "I've been there." Furiosa believes that, unquestioningly. She shifts closer on the bed, so the backs of her knuckles brush the outside of his knee. Max is quiet for a long, long few moments before he comes out and says it. "I want to know about you, but I..." But he's not ready to talk. Furiosa looks up at him and points out, "I can't think of an important thing about me that you don't already know, Max." "I know." And his hand smooths over her hair again. Still, he communicates, with carefully searching fingertips. Furiosa, who doesn't know how to give a biography anymore, would be fucked at a high school reunion if she went to a high school to begin with, turns to kiss his palm, to communicate her willingness. "I was homeschooled over here. Life on a bike wasn't for me, the whole thing, when I was 14. I moved to Canada to be near my father. Picked up the accent in a hurry. He and I didn't get along." Max sits up, sipping his drink, finishing the last swallow before setting it on the nightstand and turning back to her. He listens so intently that she can nearly feel him resonating. "I picked up my high school equivalency, and then went to university there for a couple years. I worked in garages, lived on my own, mostly in places with rats the size of small dogs." He takes her drink, too, and gently sets that out of the way, before slipping down the bed a little. Her eyes close as his hand splays against her hip. "I quit before I got anywhere with it. Then, trade school in the States, and worked there for about 10 years. I got the call that Mum was sick, and it brought me back to Melbourne and onto the road." Max has shifted now, so that he slid down the bed towards her, on his side as well, so they're face to face. She could reach out for him, easily.
"Why'd you leave them?"
The question startles her, and she doesn't catch the meaning at first, until he clarifies. your separatist lesbian bikers. Oh. The answer to that has to do with her mother's death, and with stability. It has to do with second-wave feminism and some of the big problems with it. Deep-seated issues that she isn't graceful enough to articulate, or sure of enough to get into with him here, in her bed. She loves the women, and has profound respect for them. But there are things there that are too uncomfortable for her to form as thoughts. Then, of course, there are the things that violence does to you in the long run. But she clears her throat and says instead, heterosexuality, for one thing. That makes him smile, and reach for her properly, and pull her over top of him. She helps, shifting into an easy straddle of his hips, settling there like that, before beginning the ritual process of taking off her arm. Tell me what I need to know about your leg, she instructs him, because even if he isn't necessarily ready for the rest, that's important. That's something they can't mess around with. She watches his mouth curve with frustration, even as his thumbs draw circles on her hips. It's fine. 9 times out of 10, it's fine. So if you say stop, we stop, she agrees, as she sets her prosthesis gently down, then in one fluid movement grabs the bottom of her tank top and yanks the thing over her head. That'd be true anyways. Back on the bike, pressed together frantically, had been very different from this. They hadn't even been able, or necessarily ready, for that matter, to look at each other there. Now, he sees the expanse of her skin in the soft light of her bedside lamp. That she is made of pure sinew and has scars from old road rash, from other things, and wants him, just devastatingly. She slips to the side cautiously so they can both undress, so he can take his brace down with the same ritual, careful movements as she'd used to take off the arm. He toes off his socks. She helps him get his jeans down. Naked together for the first time is the closest she's ever felt to any sort of awkwardness with him, but it doesn't last long. She touches his thigh, the leg he has trouble with, then his hip, then trails her hand along his stomach, before carefully reaching down and grasping his cock. Max goes still. Then his head slips back against the sheets and she feels him shiver, feels him begin to grow firm in her hand. Furiosa squeezes and feels him gasp. Max is still more comfortable giving than receiving, so she lets him roll her onto her back, and hums a low approval as he shifts lower, telegraphing his intentions with long kisses, with an inexorable slide down. Honest, she admits to herself that she's wanted this one particular thing from him since she saw him standing in the shop window. Max doesn't glance up, and she winds the fingers of her hand into his hair, gasping as his tongue touches against her. He eats her out until her legs are shaking, until she puts a knee in his shoulder reflexively to try and shove away from the pure overstimulation of it. And then he does it all over again, patiently parting her legs again, and pushing her right over another precipice. She bucks and fights so he pins her down, and even then her shoulders and back still arch such that she eventually thrashes her top sheet loose. In the end, she gives him another, more decisive kick out of her, and uses her knee to pivot him, put him onto his back, where he lays for her, shivering. Furiosa climbs astride him, and then waits, takes him by the jaw and waits until she sees sense in his eyes, waits for his nod. Please, yes, he says, and so she reaches for the nightstand where she keeps the condoms. When she takes him inside her, Furiosa feels though she possesses him, and understands some of the hot, angry protectiveness that comes hand in hand for some people with love. He rests his forehead against her collarbone, holds her by the hips, and is so sweet for her, gasping and clutching as she shows him the rhythm she likes with the press of her nails into the nape of his neck. The sky is turning pink at the horizon by the time they finally succumb to exhaustion. The night is too hot and close, her room too stuffy, and they're both too covered in sweat to fall asleep touching more than just the tips of their fingers.